Game On.
Game On.
2FM.
You're listening to the Game On podcast. You can join us nightly on 2FM, Monday to Friday from 7.
Game On.
Football.
So, a year to the day since Alex Ferguson last took charge of a game featuring Manchester United, the club have announced their second managerial appointment since his retirement. After weeks of speculation and expectation, Manchester United finally confirmed that Louis van Gaal would be their manager once his duties with Holland at the World Cup are completed. Ryan Giggs has retired as a player. He will be his assistant. Last week or the week before, we had a very interesting chat with Dutch soccer journalist. 3 weeks ago. Is it that long ago? Are we talking about Van Gaal that long? Leander Scherlaken. If you want to hear all about Van Gaal, how he will go about his business and what type of a man he is, I would encourage you to find the Game On podcast on iTunes or at rte.ie/Game On, and you will discover quite a bit. While you do that, let's hear Eamon Dunphy's thoughts. It's a strange one to have to talk about again. Long been a case of when this would happen rather than if it would happen. Should United fans be celebrating the club's bit of business?
Well, it's an interesting appointment. He certainly is very different to David Moyes. He's won a lot of trophies. In fact, he's won trophies every club he's been to. He's very experienced. He won the Champions League. Won La Liga with Barcelona, won the Bundesliga with Bayern Munich. So he's experienced, a proven winner. And appointing Ryan Giggs as assistant manager is interesting. And, of course, Giggs has finished as a player now. So you could say from Giggs' point of view, well, he knows the club, he knows its culture, and I think that is very important. He knows the players intimately, so that's also important. From his own point of view, perhaps Giggs might have been better going off working with a championship club, proving he could be successful as a manager, and then becoming Manchester United manager. Maybe it is an idea here that if it works satisfactorily, he might eventually become manager. But I think the immediate question is how Van Gaal can persuade the club to spend the money they need to spend. He'll be shocked, I think, when he sees the caliber of player he's left with, given the challenge that Manchester United always expect to contend for the Premier League and, of course, for the Champions League as well.
In terms of the history of the club and today in the overall picture of Manchester United, Franco Farrell aside, they have always had a British manager. Are we in like landmark territory that it's an international manager for the first time, and what likelihood there might be of another British manager in the future?
Well, it's a very interesting question, Damon. You know, if you look at all the top clubs now, apart from Liverpool, they're all managed by foreign coaches or coached by foreign coaches. And when you think of the English coaches that we see, Sam Allardyce comes to mind. You can't imagine him managing a top club. It's remarkable that that English football doesn't appear to be producing coaches of real calibre. Initially, it's ironic as well that it was the English coaches that went to places like Holland, South America, and took the game, spread the gospel. Roy Hodgson, for example, who's the England team manager, spent a lot of his career abroad. It's a very interesting question. You could hold a 2-day seminar on it, Damon, if you're up for that. Why no English coaches are emerging? But Van Gaal won't fail for want of experience. But I think his problem is, if you go to Bayern Munich or Barcelona, you're likely to have the best or second best squad of players in your league. Same at Ajax when he was at Ajax, now in the 90s. So he ain't going to have that here. And he's got a real problem. This chief executive, Woodward, doesn't appear to have had a good first year, and he was arguably at fault for much of David Moyes' difficulty. And he's got to deal with the Glazers through this guy, and he's got to get several hundred million, in my opinion, to rebuild that team. And he's got to get time. Will he have the time? Will the fans take to him? And he's got to deal with the English media as well. And he's notoriously short-tempered with the media. So that would be another problem. It would be very interesting.
But on that, you would imagine, without any great disrespect to David Moyes, if the phone rings for a major international player and it's Van Gaal on the phone rather than David Moyes, the attraction of United will always be there because of its place in world football. That perhaps those big signings, it'll be easier to convince them to come and play for a coach of his standing.
Perhaps, Damien. I think the players, like, I think they've been asked for Fabregas for a couple of years and he's spurned them. I think the fact that they're not in the Champions League will make it more difficult. I think there's an issue there with Wayne Rooney's salary, which is $300,000, I believe, after tax, a week. Now, any star player coming in is going to look at that as a benchmark, and I don't think the Glazers are going to want to spend that kind of money. So, if I look at Manchester United in the round, I think it's a club that's in trouble. For reasons that have nothing to do with Louis van Gaal. And now it depends how he can work in that environment. And it had nothing to do with David Moyes, incidentally.
Okay. Final question on United before we talk about the cup final. A lot of reports, rumours that RVP would be his captain. Would you give him the armband? Or if not, who would your Manchester United captain be with Vidic gone?
Well, yeah, I mean, Wayne Rooney might have thought that he might be the captain. I would be reluctant to give it to Van Persie. I'm not a fan of his character. He had one good season at the club. I think Rooney is a much more committed player. And if I was walking into Manchester United in the morning, he'd be my captain. But perhaps I wouldn't quibble about that. I mean, Van Gaal is entitled to make his choice. He knows Van Persie. And if that's the way to get Van Persie playing and scoring goals again, well, okay, then give him the armband. But it doesn't inspire you, the fact that he's a captain.
Okay. FA Cup final at Wembley on Saturday evening. Arsenal 2-0 down against Hull very early, but managed to come back in extra time to secure the win. Here's their manager, Arsene Wenger.
I think a big relief and a big happiness after the way we started the game to win in the end the trophy. It looked unlikely for long periods in the game because of the quality of our, because we didn't start well. Finished all well. It was the last game of the season. We finished in winning a trophy that everybody wanted, so I'm very happy.
Did you really honestly think that it wouldn't go your way?
I think you have to accept a football game. You can win or lose. Even if you don't accept it, it is like that. And Hull is a Premier League team who can pass the ball, can create chances. And you know, of course, before that you can win or lose.
Arsene Wenger chatting to Juliet Farrington of the BBC. Eamon, were they deserved winners over the 120 minutes?
Yeah, I think they were over that period of time. I mean, they could have had a couple of penalties as well. But you would expect them to be against Hull. You know, that's a team put together on a shoestring. There's a number of Irish players playing there. And I think if Arsenal had failed to win the cup, Wenger would have had huge questions to answer. As it is, it's a trophy. And it kind of relieves the pressure of being a serial sort of loser in the last 8 seasons. Mm. But I think the Cup is a very undervalued competition, Damien. You know, the big match on Saturday was in Barcelona with Atletico Madrid. And when I was a kid, you know, many people listening, when, you know, the Cup final was a very, very big occasion, and it was a huge prestige to win. It isn't like that anymore. It's something of a consolation, and that's precisely, I think, what it has been for Arsenal, you know, a consolation for other failures.
Eamon, thanks for your time as always.
My pleasure, Damien.
Let's chat a little bit more about Arsenal. Amy Lawrence covers football for The Guardian and The Observer and has a bit of a self-confessed graw for Arsenal. Sitting in Wembley, 2-0 down after 8 minutes, reports on Twitter that some fans were leaving. Could Gunners have realistically dreamed of that remarkable comeback?
That's a big question. I mean, the fact that the goals were so early, I think, gave everyone a chance to at least think you can recover. And in fact, when the first goal went in so very early and straight away a few minds went back to the dreadful loss against Birmingham City in the Carling Cup final recently. And when you get a goal 2 or 3 minutes from the end, then you've got no chance. But at least it's 2 or 3 minutes from the beginning. So you feel like you've got at least time on your side to try and recover. What interested me most about the way they came back into it was, firstly, that Arsene made an unusual decision to tactically adjust and throw two big men on when he brought Sonogo on. And the idea, it's a very un-Wenger-like strategy, really. I mean, he's the king of this sort of little creative player and trying to find neat little passes. And it was a bit, it was almost a throwback to a different era of football where he felt obliged to chuck on two big strikers. And obviously the second thing that was interesting is he revealed after the game that he had a very bad feeling in his stomach about penalties, considering they won the semi-final against on penalties against Wigan. He was clearly just, he didn't fancy it, and he didn't feel that he had the right players to take penalties, so he felt this was, you know, time to absolutely go for it, hence throwing on Rosicki and Wilshere, which I think made a big difference in the second half of extra time.
It's been suggested by some people in the post-match analysis and the celebration parade yesterday that he has celebrated it, or there has been almost an aura off him that this is as big a trophy success as he's had at the club. Is that justified talk?
It is. I mean, obviously, it doesn't correspond to an achievement like going unbeaten for an entire season and winning the Premier League as they did 10 years ago. It doesn't correspond with doing the double as they did twice in the first 4 or 5 years of his time at Arsenal as an achievement in itself. But the point that he made was it felt so important simply because this weight that was getting heavier and heavier year by year of not winning and of, you know, he could sense not just the strain on him, but what it put on the players. And, you know, psychology of all these things is always important. And in the end, if people are expecting you to fall short and fail and it's all the same old story, then that brings a certain pressure. And I think it just clearly meant such a lot to everybody psychologically to feel that they could get hold of that monkey off their back and, you know, chuck it as far away as humanly possible. And there was a feeling of... What was interesting is it wasn't just relief. Obviously, there was a lot of relief around. But it was also... It seemed to make people feel quite bullish, as if Arsenal felt that they couldn't be bullish in the last few years because they didn't have the victories or the triumphs to back it up. So if they came out with things, it was always like, well, you know, you're walking the walk, but you're not talking the talk. Well, that's the wrong way around, isn't it?
the analogy I liked over the weekend was that now for the first time people can tweet about Arsene Wenger winning a trophy because Twitter wasn't around when he last won one. So maybe that's the bitter world of analysis that we now live in.
I don't think Arsene Wenger gives a monkey's about Twitter, to be honest with you. But I just think what's interesting is the whole question of what you define success by. If you define success by trophies alone, as obviously Jose Mourinho is the archetype at doing, well, that's one thing. But others, and Mikel Arteta came out quite strongly about this before the cup final, suggesting that you know, you can measure success in different ways. And these past few years where Arsenal have had to... they've moved stadium and had to tighten their belts for a while and then come out of that, but all the time, in the meantime, the financial world of football completely was transformed by some very, very wealthy individuals, and the landscape changed, and it's taken them those years to just try and fight so hard to stay sort of steady and just about getting into the Champions League, but the fact that they've built their own stadium and they've got themselves into the position where they feel strong now to move forward, hoping that FFP makes a difference, and obviously it's going to be fascinating from an Arsenal point of view. They'll be watching very carefully to see what kind of impact it has on Manchester City and Paris Saint-Germain and on Chelsea and some of the usual bigger spenders over this summer, because they've maintained all along the idea is we get into a position where we can compete with anybody on the transfer market, and they have not been able to do that for years.
It's interesting to look at, like, listen to some of the players talk, and some former players of the club have spoken about this as if it's the start of a new chapter in the club's history, that, you know, they've got this off their back, they're winners again. Wenger is going to go into the transfer market. We've heard that before, but he insists he'll do it this time. And this new contract. Do you subscribe to that view that here we are, that the phrase that's been used is at the dawn of a new age, or surely is it too early to talk about that?
Of course, but I mean, when they were having their parade on Sunday to their supporters, there was a moment that felt very significant, where standing on this platform they'd erected at the Emirates Stadium with a huge crowd of fans below, Arsene Wenger took the microphone and talked about how important it felt to win a trophy at the Emirates and how he felt like it had almost been a curse. And that curse has now lifted. And, you know, it's difficult to understate how important that change was, leaving Highbury, particularly because the last few years leading up to when they actually left their old ground were arguably the most successful and the best football that Arsenal played since, I don't know, the 30s or ever. Mm. So it was a big change, and adapting to not really being at home and having a new home, and everything's bigger and more luxurious but a bit more sterile, and it all took a bit of coming to terms with. And it almost felt like at that moment that Arsenal felt that the Emirates era actually had something of substance, you know, and they could feel some success there in that place. And I think that that makes a bit of a difference, and that does give them a launch pad going forward. Of course, they've got to have the vision and the boldness to take that good feeling and make it grow. And the only way of doing that is by improving the team to be more competitive.
And I suppose to finish, the most important thing as someone who has an allegiance with the club or has a love for the club is, regardless of what happened and whatever might have happened to the blood pressure on Saturday evening, there's a bit of silverware coming home, which is the most important way to finish the season.
Look, it's really, people have gone madder than perhaps I think they dared to imagine. I mean, the looks on people's faces and the sheer outpouring of joy. You know, when you're used to winning trophies, you know, on a regular basis, if you're lucky enough to be Manchester United over those couple of decades or Liverpool over those 2 decades before then, and in recent little spells, Chelsea and Man City, and Arsenal had a good spell of their own. You can't help it, but when you win the umpteenth trophy in a number of years, you do get a bit blasé about it. But when you have to wait, it feels unbelievable, and you could see how much it meant to everybody. And that's what I think is interesting. If Wenger and the players can use that as some kind of inspiration, they've got to use it to push them forward, not just to think, oh, that was great, we've done it now.
Okay, we'll wait and see how next season. The pressure could easily be on by Christmas again. We'll wait and see how it all plays out. Amy, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers. Game over.